Hi, welcome back. Happy Wednesday. My name is Jacob Kniep. I am your podcast host, and I am the founder and CEO of Outspoken Leaders. Outspoken Leaders is a nonprofit organization here in the Chicagoland area dedicated to serving and empowering all LGBTQ+ youth, young adults, and future leaders. Today, I had the honor of chatting with Julie Novak. I am so excited to share this story with you. Let's jump in. As many of you guys know, this podcast first started off during the COVID-19 pandemic. One of the things that you're going to notice in the first couple of episodes of this podcast is that a lot of people are adjusting to this new normal while we're all sheltering in place. And this is no different for Julie. I started off this interview by asking her how she is, and this is what we talked about.
I'm okay. I mean, it's up and down. Like, there's been some really tense moments, and also there's always tense moments if I decide to open the news. But we're so lucky. I'm really, really, really lucky that I'm upstate and, you know, yesterday I went and hung out with my partner who lives like 10 minutes down the road, and her apartment is in the middle of the woods. And like, we just walked around, and it's so nice that I have this one person I can connect with, you know, physically, like be close to, just like, you know, it's intense. And then my mom is a stage 4 cancer patient, and
oh, no.
76. So she's very high risk. And on Sunday I called her, and she's kind of like tough. And she had like a fever of 102.5. And she was like, oh, I guess I have a little bit of a fever. And I was like, Mom, you have to call the urgent care. Like, you know, she was like tired and chills, and she got a COVID test, and it was negative. And I was like, thank you, Jesus. 'Cause there's just, you know, I'm like her primary care person because my father passed away last year. So it's like, so I juggle a lot. And then on the other side of it, I'm doing great work with Future Perfect. I'm creating more content, like comedy videos and stuff that I'm putting up on social media. So I'm finding ways to be creative and, you know, stay positive or proactive.
And cope. You're finding ways to cope.
Yeah. Versus just like curling up in a ball and eating 24 hours.
So before we even started the interview, she started jumping into what she's doing during the pandemic. A little bit about Julie. Julie is a comedic performer. She works with the Future Perfect Project, and she works with the TMI Project. Some of these discussions will come up throughout the course of, you know, figuring out a little bit more about her. But before we jump into all of the great things that she's doing now, I really wanted to figure out what made her who she is today. I really wanted to figure out who Julie Novak is, and, you know, what made her into this wonderful, amazing woman that I had the opportunity to talk to today.
Who I am? I am someone who loves connecting with people and helping people bring out their best, most authentic, and sometimes most liberated selves. So what I'm about at the core is that, is hope and love and connection. I'm a comedic performer. People often say that I'm a stand-up comic. I've done stand-up. I don't prefer stand-up. I prefer storytelling, but I approach everything through a comedic, like, all my best work is always through a comedic lens. It's subversive, but it's a comedy. Yeah. So I mean, my one woman show is comedy. So I guess I could call myself a comic, but I think comedic performer is a little bit more accurate.
We must liberate our labias from a penis slavery.
Thank you.
And that was just a little clip from Julie Novak's one-woman show. As you can tell, everybody's laughing. Everybody's having a good time. Wonderful show. I was so lucky to be able to see it. I recommend, you know, if you have a chance to be able to go see her or, you know, even interact with her, it's a great opportunity. I did want to take this chance to switch directions and, you know, talk to Julie about what made her who she is. I want to talk about her early life, and I really want to figure out where she's coming from and figure out more about Julie Novak and who Julie Novak really is.
When I was young, I was like, my mom would call me like the closet entertainer. Like, I would perform for good friends and for my family, but I never wanted to get on stage. That was in the background of everything, as well as growing up in a house where there was a lot of turmoil with addiction issues and a lot of strife between my sister and I. And so I grew up with stuff going on at home that was pretty intense. But at school, I was like the class clown. And I was, you know, even at home, I was still very vivacious. So I had this dual thing happening, but it really came crashing down on me. I really started to turn to alcohol toward the end of my first year of high school and started using it to escape. And depression really started to creep in, and it came to like a crashing breaking point when I was in 10th grade. I didn't know what was happening to me, but I started having what I know now are like panic attacks. And I mean, my whole life just completely split apart. Like I at that point began this slow decline of being very social to isolating myself. I thought I was going crazy, didn't know what was wrong with me. I've always been a joyful person, always big sense of humor. Then things really took a nosedive when I was in my second year of high school. I'd had some big struggles with being gay and closeted and not knowing anyone in my small town of Ohio who was gay. I had had crushes on girlfriends that I totally thought would be reciprocated, because I saw myself in a certain way as being like, I could feel this connection there. And I never saw myself as being a boy. I grew up feeling boyish and doing boy things, but I was always comfortable in myself and with my body. And as I was getting rejected, it was through subtle cues. I didn't ever say like, I'm in love with you, but I started to realize that people weren't seeing me the way I saw myself, and ended up over a period of years, really severely isolating, where I ended up leaving Ohio and moving to New York. But I would like live most of my life in my room. I just was like, I'm not fit to be around anybody. I still held my spirit. I knew I was in there somewhere, but I just couldn't. My identity was so fragmented, and the mental illness on top of it was really intense. And there was OCD, like there was a combination of stuff that we could talk about. But the way that this OCD and anxiety manifests in my brain is very, it's not about like typical OCD where you're like, did I leave the oven on? It's more, I have a tendency when I get left alone in this neighborhood to go down the what if scenarios that can cause me almost to get paralyzed. Like my father used to say, like paralysis through analysis. So I have this duality of being very free and then also, and so many creative people talk about this, like being the saboteur that gets in my own way. What ended up happening that makes me really who I am is that I finally, through a series of different modalities, therapy, I ended up checking myself into a hospital toward the end of this crisis when I was like 23, being like, I can't, if I continue to try to manage this on my own, I'm going to hurt myself. I might hurt someone else. I was so out of control. So that was the start of a healing process. It was very slow. And I mean, it took a lot of stops and starts, but I slowly started to reemerge. It was such a beautiful thing because I had such a strong sense of self from the time I was very young. And I used to say my name over to myself, like, and over, like, I'm Julie Novak. Like, I just have to find that girl again. And so healing happened. I decided to go back to school at SUNY New Paltz. Ended up moving to the New Paltz area where I found, like, an amazing queer community. Like, it was the first time I was, like the popular kid, like, the way I wanted to be. Like, the gay, like all the gay gals were like, hey, there's this new girl on the scene. She's, you know, and I was like, oh my God, this is the kind of thing, like, I never had before. And so through community, queer community, and a lot of love, I started to reemerge and got the confidence to start to perform again. I started to get on stage and do, I play music, I do comedy stuff. And I found such joy in that because I love to make people laugh.
We need to talk to you. They sit me down at the picnic table, the two of them on one side, me on the other. This is not going to be good. What were you doing over there? Playing with toy cars? That is not what girls do. If you want to be friends with us, you need to stop acting like a boy.
Julie Novak was finally confident enough and was finally herself to be able to go back on stage. She made so many people laugh. I am so glad that she was able to find her community and she was able to find not only that, but also find herself and find who she was supposed to be and make these people laugh and become the performer and the comedic performer that she is today. I did want to dive a little bit deeper into those struggles and find out why all of this was happening. So we got the chance to talk a little bit about her coming out story.
Early on in my coming out process, you know, I just didn't have a community. I didn't have a sense of self. I didn't, I still felt pretty lonely. And then when I did finally have my first girlfriend, I was so kind of screwed up. Especially, you know, the addiction plays a part in that too. Like, I was not drinking so much, but I still wasn't sober. Like, my brain just was, I just wasn't stable. And I really screwed that up. And then after that, there was a long, like, that ended and it was just like a long period of, like, you know, again, like, depression and heartbreak, like, I'll never be able to date again and all this stuff. And I feel bad for that teenager who struggled so much. And of course, I don't ever want to see anyone go through something like that.
If you're comfortable, I'd like to talk about your coming out story. It sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like a lot of your creative outlets and, you know, your helping people came from some of the turmoils that you had growing up. And if you're comfortable, I'd like to kind of dive deeper into that to kind of get a view of who Julie Novak is.
Yeah, sure. Well, I think for me, a big core part of the struggle was there's just something in me, and I think probably it's from my mother, and our family in general is very, we're very forthright and very, we talk about what we're feeling very openly. And my mom has always been a rebel. She's an artist. She grew up with a really crazy childhood circumstances. She used to, like, my bedtime stories from her were, like, always about, like, oh, like, she would tell me these stories of, like, crazy things that would happen to her. She just was really on her own a lot. Like, her mom sometimes would, like, drop her off at orphanages and be like, I'll be back, I'm not sure when. And her dad was in World War II and out of the picture and blah, blah, blah. But she was always very open with me and always taught me to like, speak my mind and question authority. And I just naturally was very, you know, I would put myself out there very easily. And I keep on losing my train of thought. Oh, about who I am. So I feel like I was naturally quite confident and like wasn't afraid to put myself out there. But at the same time, I had an older sister who was very, we get along now, but when we were younger, she acted out toward me in a very, I'm just very sensitive, and she really took advantage of that. And I was like a target for her, where I got made fun of a lot. I was, it was hard. Being at home was hard. And I was in tears every day for some reason or another. So it was important for me, because I got targeted at home, to be not targeted at school. And I think that what I find that I struggle with sometimes is I wonder, like, if I, and maybe this wouldn't have happened, but sometimes I wonder, like, if I had gotten, because it wasn't just about at home. I mean, there was no support for being queer anywhere. I didn't see anybody in the media. I didn't hear anybody's voices. I didn't see anybody in the community that looked like me. I think, though, if I would have had just one person, even if it was another, it didn't even have to be adult, if it was another kid or adult, I think it would have gone differently. But part of me just was like, I didn't want to take the risk of being true to myself about that aspect of my identity, because I didn't, I already was like, I don't want things to get even harder than they already are. Like, I don't want to get made fun of. I don't want to get rejected. I don't want to risk any of that. And sometimes I wonder, like, is that because things were already coming at me so hard? And I was just very sensitive, or is it like a combination? Now that I'm talking to you about it, I'm like, well, you know, I think about like what young people have today. Like, James and I went to this Time to Thrive conference, this human rights conference, which is like the youth summit of HRC. And there were all these different celebrity guests there who are like, I can't remember the woman's name, but she's the first trans woman who's like a superhero on TV on the show Supergirl. And just like watching what access young people now have, like, it just, I just did not think, like, when I first fell in love and realized that the person I fell in love with when I was like maybe 15 didn't love me, I was like, or like it happened twice. The first time it happened, I was 13, and I was like, oh, this isn't going to happen for me. I'm going to kill myself by the end of the summer. I'm not sure I'm going to do it yet, but I don't have any choice. Like, I just, and I talked to other people in my generation, I'm 47, who were like, one friend was like, oh, I'm going to move to France. That's the only way I can be gay. For some reason, in his child mind, he was like, if I move to France, I can be gay. And for me, I was like, this isn't going to happen, and I just have to end it, because the heartbreak was so deep. And obviously I didn't do that. Something in me came alive again by the end of that summer, where I was like, no, I can get through this. And my hope got renewed that maybe it would work out with somebody else. And then it happened again when I was a freshman in high school, and I was like, okay, I'm just gonna have, I didn't think about ending my life, but I was like, I guess I'm just gonna have to accept that this is not gonna happen. And I'll always have these close friends who are girls, but I'll just have to do the thing that I'm supposed to be doing. And, you know, unlike, you know, if I like talking to my partner, like almost everybody I know that was not living in Stowe, Ohio, that friends that I have now, everybody was experimenting like in different places, and it just wasn't happening for like where I was. I just didn't, I mean, it might've been, I just didn't know about it. And so I just felt like this isn't gonna happen for me. I'm gonna just have to go through the motions and play the game. And so I did that, and that's when things, you know, and I also, like, so things got bad with the drinking and the depression, and then I just did not want to be gay. I was like, I just so badly didn't want to be gay. It was like the worst thing in the world that could have happened to me, where I just was like all the time trying to battle. I remember when I was like maybe like 19 or 20, I was going to a community college and I had this friend, John, and he wanted me to come out to a show with him. And I was like, I don't know, I don't feel like it. I mean, I might be gay. And I just was like, my life is ruined. So, and he just was like, so what? Like at the time I remember him being like, so what? And I was like, you don't fucking understand what this is like, dude. And, but now that I look back on it, I'm like, you know, I guess I think that I like to, help people find ways to, love themselves and accept themselves within reason. Like I'm not going to tell a young person, just come out to your dad if I think their dad might like beat them or something, you know. I try to really approach all things with compassion, because I never felt like I would never want anybody to feel as bad as I felt. And, you know, again, it wasn't just being gay. It was also like untreated mental health issues were happening that were just so out of control that I grew up in a house where it was like, just be tough. You can figure this out. And it cost me it took a long time to learn how to like reconnect with people and love myself after such a long period of time beating myself up and resisting. It's just so interesting now, because I can't imagine if I was born at this time that I would have even remotely any of the amount of resistance I had, like, because it's just so different. Like it's just such a different time now. But
there's also that community.
I finally did come out when I was 21, and I was crying. I told my mom. She was just like accepting, but was just like, I'm just worried that people are going to target you. My dad was like, okay. I remember he was on the phone, cause he traveled a lot, and he was like, can I talk to mom? Like, he didn't even think twice about it. My sister, who was out of college at the time, was like, oh my God, that's so cool. Like, I have friends that are gay. And then my brother was like, that's cool. I mean, you're not, but if you think you are, that's fine. But like, nobody, like, I was very lucky in the sense that I didn't, you know, nobody disowned me. Nobody, you know, like, you know, you hear stuff from, especially from the young people that we visit in different places, like, it's not safe. So, and then after that, what was really hard, I think, after coming out, I still didn't have a community to come out to. So I still didn't, I just gave up on thinking I would ever meet someone that I really wanted to be with. Like, I was scraping by, especially living in Middletown, New York at the time, which is worlds away, even though it's just across the county line, about an hour from the Hudson Valley, New Paltz. New Paltz is a college town. Middletown is a more working class. Like, I remember going, like, trying to online date and meeting people that I was like, this person is not exactly the person I'd maybe want to, like, have a deep. I just was so desperate, though, I was so desperate, because it wasn't just that I was gay and not dealing with that. I was, before I came out, I was totally isolating myself, like, so I was just starved for like some kind of connection.
And eventually Julie did find that community and that connection, and it helped her become the person that she is today. And that community helped her do the great things like the TMI Project and her one woman show, and start working with James Lacine from episode 1 on the Future Perfect Project. But we're going to talk more about that when we get back from a couple words from our sponsors. Again, Outspoken Leaders is a nonprofit organization dedicated to serving and empowering all LGBTQ plus youth, young adults, and future leaders. You can support us directly by making a donation. All donations are tax deductible to the fullest extent of the law. You can also order some of our clothing and magnets and stickers found on our shop. And also, if you live in the Chicagoland area and you want to volunteer, that also helps us as well. All of that information can be found on our website at www.outspokenil.org. So let's just hear from a word from our sponsors. Again, these sponsors help us do great things like serve and empower the LGBTQ plus leaders of tomorrow. Here we go.
I'm not sure how I should feel or what I should show, so I decide to play it neutral. She says, "Do you like it?" I don't know. It's called Hump. You want me to do it again? On the outside, I play cool. You know, whatever, if you want to. But on the inside, I'm screaming, "Are you fucking kidding me? Hell yes! I want you to do Hump again! I want you to do Hump for the rest of our lives!"
Before the break, we were talking about Julie Novak finding her community and really becoming the person that she is. Let's dive into that right now.
It was finding my community here and finding people that, you know, as I got healthier through doing therapy and doing different, when I did check myself into the hospital, I started on medication. An antidepressant medication, just that started to uncloud my thinking so I could kind of start to emerge again and my authentic self. I mean, it took a long time, but slowly started to come out. And I found community first through theater. Like I always wanted to be on stage, but I still, when I first got into theater, it was, at the college I went to, it's called SUNY. It was a SUNY school, SUNY Orange. When I went and got my associates, I had like a communications, I went for communications, but I was a student stage manager at the time. I was interested in working behind the scenes in the theater. And then I ended up a couple of years later getting hired to be the assistant stage manager. And that's when I, for the first time, I started like meeting the queer kids, because that's where we all tend to end up, is in theater. But I was still like really behind the scenes, but with the class, like, cause I taught a stagecraft class, I was very like, I felt very safe to like do my humor and be myself. Still not fully though. Like so much of this is about mentorship for me and community. Like I started to have more gay friends. I started another relationship briefly, but I just felt like I had a community, but I still felt a little bit separate. And I still wasn't quite ready to dive in. I ended up then doing publicity design for first productions. And I was like, oh, I like this. I'm going to go into graphic design because I can work by myself. Like I still wasn't ready to work in partnership. I was still, they're just wounds and this lack of self-esteem and self-belief. But so I went to SUNY New Paltz, majored in art with this concentration in graphic design. And I remember just like, there were a couple people, there was this one person that I met through a woman I was dating. And I hardly knew this person, but I could tell she was funny and cool. And I was like, I'm going to bypass the person I'm dating, who was my connection to this woman, and just like call her and be like, do you want to hang out? Like I wanted friends. I wanted like-minded friends. Called her, was like, oh, do you want to like, and just started just like, it was the first time I initiated a friendship, like with this intention of like, this seems like one of my people. And cause she had a great sense of humor. And so I started hanging out with her. And through her, I met all of her friends and this whole community of queer women who I really started to feel felt like I belonged to. And it was really cool because Christy was her name, and Christy and I like did stuff. Like I went to Washington D.C. with her, and like went to there was like a march on Washington for queer folks in like maybe it was like 99 or something. I just remember starting to emerge more and feeling confident and feeling seen, and but still was not fully. I would, again, I'd go to parties and people would be like, oh, you're the funny one. We love when you come to this. And, but I still was like, not about, people would say to me like a lot, like, why don't you do this on stage? Why don't you perform? And I still just didn't feel comfortable. And so through this community and through, there's just a beautiful, vibrant, creative community here, like in a nice queer community. I don't remember how I got involved, but there was a woman named Ann Citron who was teaching an improv class, and I decided to take it. And it was through Ann as a mentor that I really felt like I can be whoever I want to be in different skits and be totally supported. Like she just was like, you have something really special and you're talented. And I felt like she would be open to like me creating any characters I wanted to. And because I wanted to explore that part, and still I play these male, I write these little characters for different things I do that are these totally idiotic men. it's really fun to play those parts because people don't expect it. And so it was just amazing to find a group of people that were like, oh, what you learned about yourself, dude, it was like totally not true. Like, you're so amazing just as you are. Like, I just didn't think I could just be who I was and be accepted. And, you know, I write a monologue too. It's called Football Princess, about that experience of like, my mom, I was supposed to be a boy. Like that's the story. Like my mom's obstetrician was like, you're definitely gonna have a boy. And my mom was like, nope, I'm having a girl. I need to have a girl because I have one daughter and she needs to have somebody to play with. And it turns out that even from the second that I was being delivered, the doctor was like, as he was removing me, he was like, well, say, like, he could see my body at the top and he was like, say hello to your little football princess. Like, he saw that I didn't have a penis and was like, oh. I remember doing the monologue Football Princess, and it was from the second before I got on stage to do it, I was like, this is going to be awful. I was so like scared to show this side of myself. And it was one of the best experiences I ever had. It was so fun. And afterwards, so many people came up to me, mostly cis, very feminine women who were like, I used to pretend to be a boy too all the time. You know, I did X, Y, and Z. And I was like, oh my God, like, I just felt like I was the only one in so many areas of my life. But through telling my story, I realized like, this is not weird. Like, nothing's wrong with you, you know? And that's where I think I started to really thrive, with my performing and TMI Project was the first place I ever started to write, because I never wanted to tell my own story. I always wanted to play characters. And Eva encouraged me to dive in. And that's when I wrote Football Princess. And it turned out to be just a really amazing experience. Through different monologues is how I developed my one-woman show. But yeah, so community has so much to do with this.
I spend all of my free time pretending to be a stocky blonde-haired doctor on General Hospital. I'm the man who saves the day. I'm the man all the ladies get sick over. Who knew that under all this man was all this woman? I fall asleep in the uniform that night with a smile on my face, grateful for the body that God gave me.
And it was this monologue that Julie performed that really opened up about herself, that really told her true story. This monologue is what really pushed the TMI Project to be all that it is. This embodies what the TMI Project is. It is people telling the things that they wouldn't normally tell, telling the stories they usually leave behind, and they've done so much good for everybody in their communities. Let's hear more about what the TMI Project is from Julie herself.
My partner and I had founded another nonprofit called TMI Project, and TMI Project is an organization, a nonprofit, where we help people tell their true stories, and we encourage them to include the parts they usually leave out, the TMI parts, because those are the parts where the most transformation happens. And when we first started teaching the workshops, we also participated in them. So I, for the first time, got to write stuff that I thought I would never write about. And the liberation of writing about something you're ashamed of and then performing it on stage for like 500 people and getting reflected back at you like, that's an amazing thing that you did. Or like, I totally relate. Like, I did that too. It takes away this shame in your head and it leaves space for joy and to do the things you really want to do. So I love reciprocating that and just modeling for people like it's okay to be vulnerable or goofy or look stupid or really like, because I just through trial and error have done that and found such growth and such healing through it. So I would say the first thing I'm about is just regardless of who else is there, like connecting with people. One of the things that is so important about the work I do with Future Perfect Project and TMI Project is that it's so much about actively listening versus just hearing. And that is where the amazing connections happen. In the Future Perfect Project workshops, our first day always starts with a discussion where we really just let them know you are in a safe space, all feelings are welcome. And we just sit back and we listen, and that creates, and we do that with TMI Project as well. And the intimacy that gets developed happens in a very short amount of time. TMI Project is a nonprofit organization that uses true storytelling for social justice movement building. We believe that by sharing openly, honestly, and candidly, people, like I had said before, can dispel shame and stigma that keep them from connecting. When we know something personally, rather than abstract, like we work with relations who don't have their voices amplified. People of color, queer folks, veterans, victims of domestic violence. It motivates people to care more when they can make a personal connection. When you abstractly hear somebody's story, you're like, oh, that sounds rough. But then when you see the person that it happened to tell it on stage, you're more likely to be called to action to want to do something about it. So as I had said a little bit before, Eva and I had, as friends, had worked together on the Vagina Monologues. She had been asked to direct this production as a fundraiser for a local organization that mentors women. And so we did it in, I think, 2007, 2008, and then again in 2009, maybe. And each time we had raised like a lot of money for this organization. And the fourth time, maybe it was either the third or fourth time they asked her to do it again. That's when she literally was like, I'm vagina'd out. I don't want to do this again. Why don't we work on our own stories? So in her living room, the cast of who had been participating in the Vagina Monologues got together and just ended up free writing about stuff. I didn't go to those first couple of sessions because I was like, I'm not going to do that. That's not for me. Like I don't tell my own story. I play characters or whatever. But everybody started writing stuff. And as they shared with each other, the theme they started to see was like, that they were telling stories that were like, kind of stuff that was embarrassing or that they'd never told anybody. And at first they were like, what are we going to call this? What are we going to call this show? Like, Act Normal was one of the ideas. Cause like everybody was trying to get through life, but had this craziness going on in the background. And so there was this theme among all the stories that they were, her friend Joan, Joan Morgan, was like, what about too much information? And that landed. And so we did that first show, and I think I was the only person at the time, because I was still like, I don't know if I'm going to do it. And Eva was like, because I didn't want to write a story, and I don't know what was happening at the time, but she was like, why don't you take this story that you have written called Ding Dong about your coming out experience, which was a totally fantasy experience, and just do that one. And it ended up being like, as they say, like a showstopper that was just a very big part of my, changed my performance life. And then Football Princess the next year. But so we ended up just being a community storytelling thing that at first we were just like, oh, we should, people were so moved by that performance of the whole TMI project experience. It was all women. People ended up coming up to Eva and they were like, this is one of the best things I've ever seen. People later said, on the way home, I drove home with my mom and we talked about stuff we'd never talked about before. It was like a phenomenon that was like spreading through our community. And Eva was like, we should do this again. Maybe we should teach a class. So we ended up opening up a workshop to the community for like donate what you can type of thing. And at that point, Eva wanted to get... we wanted to get another person with like a more literary, like professional editorial background. And so down the road lived a friend of mine named Sari Botten, who ended up coming on board and being a teacher with us. And it kind of started from there. Like the workshops got more popular. The performances were selling out. We garnered the attention of a funder who was like, we'd like to help you become like a nonprofit that can sustain. And it just started to become something really special. And then it shifted to, okay, we're working with like folks in the community, but that can get a little sticky in a small community. We're getting the same participants over and over again. They're friends or even family members. And why don't we shift our focus to populations that, like, see if we can partner with organizations. So one of our longest partnerships has been with Mental Health Association in Ulster County, where we do twice a year, we do two free 10-week workshops. And the first dibs of getting into the workshop are for their participants who get help. Often people that are just finishing are coming out of a hospitalization for a mental health issue, and they use the association as a resource for like day workshops or like therapy and stuff like that. So those are some of the most amazing storytelling workshops that we do, but we do those for the community and we're funded. So Mental Health Association pays us to do the workshops. And that's where the model now is we stopped, we weren't able to sustain income from the just community workshops. So we started working with Mental Health Association in Ulster County. We've done partnerships with a local high school. We worked with the United Nations, a woman who was in the head of the United Nations. Oh, God, I can't remember it. I'll have to send you one of our media kits and you can see all this stuff. But just all these different groups that really were like, wow, the work that we did with you has changed our participants. And I mean, just watching people, like people with addiction get sober, people who came, there was one person that came into our workshop, a cis man who was not happy with who he was and ended up transitioning to be her full self through and through. There's just been so many examples of people that have taken the workshop who've been like completely different people afterwards, and shared their story for the first time about, you know, loss or sexual abuse or addiction or just there's just so many topics that we've dealt with. And now we just launched actually our podcast. I am less of Eva and I were working like in tandem on this for the first couple of years of it, but in a relationship I just was like, I don't like this full enmeshment. This will be your like thing. I still teach, but the podcast that got just got released, it's hosted by Eva, and then there's another teacher named Micah, and it just launched 2 days ago, I think, and it's on Apple Podcasts. And the first season is called Tragedy Plus Time Equals Comedy, and it's a collection of stories from participants over the years. So we've done, through some of these partnerships, we've created films. We did a movie called Vicarious Resilience about our work with the Mental Health Association, a movie called Locker Room Talk. We worked with an organization called A Call to Men and the Kingston High School football team. And most recently with James, we did a project called Lifelines, where we did a national call for people that use the Trevor Project. And we're in the process of editing and post-production on that film. But we're trying to show people, and it's very hard because what we do offers so much healing, and it really does affect social change, but it's not, getting funded for us has been hard because it's not, people don't quite understand unless you come and see what we do or really watch, because we have a billion videos of our stories on YouTube. Like, it's not like we're offering like food, clothing, and shelter, which are like immediate needs. We're offering something transformative that is, can come across as more abstract to people. But I feel like the work that we do is one of the things I'm proudest of ever in my life of being a part of. And I've seen the most sustainable changes happen in people's interpersonal relationships and the way people then show up in the world, like how they choose to change their role in the community because they have, they've been so, so inspired by the work and by the love received from, and just the relief, like there's, it's just incredible what these performances do for people. I mean, it really is just, I've never seen anything like it. It's
You heard our first episode of the Outspoken Leaders podcast. You know that we chatted with James Lacine, the co-founder of the Trevor Project and also the founder of the Future Perfect Project. He is the one that introduced me to Julie and all of the great things that she's doing. And it is just a wonderful connection. And I truly believe that, you know, this connection here proves that everything happens for a reason and everybody's supposed to meet who's supposed to meet. And yeah, let's just hear about what Julie has to say.
We ended up meeting James through, you know, it's a really awesome roundabout thing is that Eve Ensler and the Vagina Monologues were a big part of how TMI got started. And then we started this thing called Voices in Action each year where we honor somebody local, and Eve lives near us. And Eva was like, I'm gonna see if I can find a way to ask Eve to be our first honoree. And she brought James as her date, and James saw what we did. And at the end of the performance, went up to Eva and was like, I know what I'm doing for the rest of my life. I'm working with you. And then like we developed a friendship and a partnership and you know, it's just, and Eve has been a huge supporter. James obviously is a huge supporter. We continue so graciously. We get funding. There's a foundation that has an office right here in Kingston that is called Novo. And Novo is a huge, huge, huge nationwide supporter of, you know, V-Day, Eve's organization, A Call to Men, which is another thing that you should look up. It's an amazing organization. Our organization, a bunch of other nonprofits in Kingston. Like, our community is pretty unique. There was an article in The Guardian written about Kingston being like taking you inside the town that's preparing for the end of capitalism. Like, it's very, we have a very unique, special community here. The radio station is another thing Novo supports. I have a radio show on. It's pretty awesome. And they helped produce the TMI Project podcast. So there's just, I mean, I could talk about it forever, really. Like, we've worked with incarcerated teen boys. Eva and Micah did a workshop with animal rights activists recently. We've done a lot of work. We still haven't cracked our national audience the way we want to, and that's what the podcast hopefully will do. But this Lifelines film could be really amazing. So we're still trying to get funding for that. But there's just so many examples of people that have, and ways I've been moved too, like stories I never thought about. Like, we did a show called What to Expect When You're Not Expecting, about unplanned pregnancies. Which we've been talking about for years of redoing, especially since, you know, right before the 2016 election. And, but it was the first time I heard a story from a man who talked about, his girlfriend getting pregnant and her wanting to have an abortion and him being like, I don't want to, like, I want to be more a part of this choice, and like how it felt for him to like go through that from his perspective that I'd never thought about. Just all kinds of different angles, because the populations are all different economic backgrounds, different ages. I mean, we've worked with, the only population we haven't worked with and that we won't ever work with is like, I mean, we've worked with high schoolers, but not anyone under like 13. Like, it's, which is fine. Like, we don't often do a lot of work with schools because it can be hard to get in to, there's a lot of bureaucracy and stuff, but we've had so many amazing partnerships, and the Vicarious Resilience film did get into film festivals and has done well. And there's just been amazing content generated, and we really are hoping to get it out there more to a wider audience. So the podcast just launched, and already it's doing well. People are really responding to it, and it's been so cool. There's been so many people too who had this hidden talent, either comedic or performative, that we didn't know, and then they all of a sudden got on stage and it was like, you're like amazing. And then they're like, I want to do this again. Like, some people take the workshop and they're like, I don't think I'm going to read, this is too vulnerable. And there's only been like two people out of hundreds that have taken the workshop that haven't read, but almost always after somebody reads, they're like, when can I do it again? Oh my God, it was amazing. You know?
Oh my gosh, I love that so much.
Yeah. And we do it. We have another series called Black Stories Matter that we've done the past like 4 years in a row. And that's been, we put it on for free in a church around here, and like 600 people will come to hear these stories about Black people in this community and how, what it's like for them to be alive in this world and in America. And that's just been another really powerful program that we do. So it's been pretty awesome.
Julie, thank you so much for, you know, taking the time to chat with me today. And
you're
seriously,
welcome.
Thank you for all the hard work that you're doing. You know, since I started my nonprofit, it's really been to, you know, give these youth and young adults a community that they don't get, because I'm in a town that's not super accepting of LGBTQ+ youth. So I just want to thank you for, you know, amplifying the voices of people who may not otherwise be able to do that.
Yeah, you're so welcome. Thank you for what you're doing too. I'm so glad that you found yourself coming back into this after, you know, during the time that we're in right now, which can be really isolating and scary.
Of course.
You're doing well, good work. Well, you
know, I'm trying to give you a voice as well, trying to reach you out to the people in Illinois at least.
Yeah.
It was amazing talking with Julie today, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. If you are looking for more information on her, you can find the TMI Project, the Future Perfect Project, and her website all in the description below. We will also post some of the videos and some of the other content that she shared with us. I really hope that you guys go check out what she's doing and what she's up to, along with James over at the Future Perfect Project, and with everything that she's doing. She's just a wonderful person. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I hope you guys have a great day.